Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with a CBS World News Roundup. With the inauguration of Ronald Reagan only 2 hours away, events in the Carter administration's struggle to win release of the hostages before the swearing-in of Mr. Reagan have been rushing toward a climax. The effort went on all night in Washington, centered on the White House and the State Department. We have reports from both, commencing with Jed Duval at the White House.
The president worked all night long. A snag had developed, and he stayed in the Oval Office to lead the work of unraveling. A seemingly endless back and forth with lawyers and bankers and government officials in Washington, London, Algiers, Tehran. Fundamentally, a quarrel over how much money Iran would get. It was a problem that White House spokesman Jody Powell called not insurmountable. In the middle of the night, after a long delay, with the fear abroad that the whole hostage agreement might come apart, he seemed incongruously optimistic. He knew, apparently, that there was something one might be cheerful about. Things could, he knew, move quickly. And then they did. Funds were transferred from the U.S., unfrozen, moved to London, put quickly into escrow in the Bank of England, under the control of the Algerians. The Algerians then, according to the instructions in the overall agreement that had already been worked out, were to officially inform Iran that the money, billions of dollars, exact amount to come later, was on deposit. Algeria did that, and America waited for the actual hostage release. Jed Duval, CBS News, the White House.
And the White House says it expects that release to be expeditious. Now the story of the State Department, reported by Robert Shackney.
The last-minute hitch which prevented the release of the hostages yesterday involved another dispute or misunderstanding over money. According to White House spokesman Jody Powell, the issue was the amount of interest due on the frozen assets that the United States is returning to Iran. But other officials say the real problem was a misunderstanding on the part of Iranian central bankers about the language used in the agreement providing for the return of these assets. According to these officials, American banks were only estimating the total value of the assets of $8 billion. But the Iranians thought the estimates were precise figures and that the numbers were too low. Former White House counsel Lloyd Cutler and senior Treasury Department officials and representatives of 12 banks worked on the problem overnight. Messages were relayed to Iran, and by the early morning hours, the problem had been resolved. No one would spell out the details of the financial agreements before the hostages left Iran. At the State Department, officials of the Iran Working Group stood by all this past night for one of their final duties, ready to inform hostage relatives when word is received that the plane carrying the hostages has left Iran. Robert Shackney, CBS News, the State Department.
It's understood that bankers in New York, Chicago, and San Francisco also stood by throughout the night waiting for the transfer process to begin. Government and banking industry sources said the transfer would all be handled electronically. As one source remarked, it's just a matter of pushing buttons. The frenzied night-long activity in Washington coincided with activity in Algiers, where diplomats waited anxiously to sign the latest agreements. David Culhane reports from the Algerian capital.
A spokesman at the Algerian Foreign Ministry just said that there are a few details still to be resolved. We asked if the new accord had been signed yet by American, Algerian, and British officials. The spokesman replied, "I cannot answer that question right now." And that's the way it's been going here in Algiers for several hours. Everyone understands the central thrust of what is underway, but it is very difficult to know precisely what stage the action has reached. Officials here are being even more discreet than usual, everyone afraid to upset the delicate balance that has apparently been achieved. Agreement about how to handle interest on frozen Iranian assets. A London account for transfer of those funds from the United States has apparently been set up. But has Algiers so informed Iran? No one here will say. Foreign Minister Ben Yahya has been seen coming and going this morning, but what he's saying to Iran is not yet known. David Culhane, CBS News, Algiers.
The departure of the hostages from Iran now appears to be almost at hand. Dan Raviv has details in London.
Officials at Tehran's Mehrabad airport said the hostages were expected to be brought there about now. Sources say the 52 Americans were at the airport for a while yesterday, waiting for their flight to freedom, which was delayed by disagreements over some banking technicalities. Six doctors who had examined the hostages and found them to be in good health have gone to the airport after telling reporters they would be flying with the hostages to Algiers. Early this morning, it appeared that the long-awaited release would not come before Ronald Reagan's swearing-in ceremony if the hostages would go free at all today. Iran's negotiator, Behzad Nabhavi, accused the American banks of trying to cheat Iran, and he said the banks were guilty for any delays. Informed sources said top Iranian officials were up nearly all night, working with the Algerian go-betweens to finalize the agreement that had seemed so final yesterday. When the frozen Iranian assets were transferred to an Algerian escrow account here in London at the Bank of England, that was the signal in Tehran to release the hostages. Dan Raviv, CBS News, London.
Once the hostages get out of Iran, again assuming that they're about to be released, they'll be flown in Algerian 727s to Algiers, where U.S. Air Force medical evacuation planes will pick them up and fly them to the Rhein-Main Air Force Base in West Germany near Frankfurt. Then they'll go in military buses to Wiesbaden, 25 miles away. They'll be quartered there in a wing of the Air Force Hospital, which was built by the Germans before World War II. Doctors and psychiatrists are standing by for physical and mental tests. Diplomats will be ready to debrief them. 2 hours from now, on a clear, warm day in Washington, Ronald Reagan will be inaugurated as the 40th President of the United States. Reed Collins sets the scene.
For the first time in the history of the nation, a president will take the oath of office looking westward toward America. From the west front of the Capitol that overlooks the Mall, the Washington Monument, the Lincoln Memorial, and across the Potomac, Arlington. After the 35-word oath, hail to the chief and the 21-gun salute, comes the inaugural address, described as vintage Reagan. A luncheon follows inside the Capitol, and then the parade. 21 high school bands, 10 military bands, the troops, the colors, and animals. A veritable history of equestrian America with dog sleds from Alaska thrown in. The Mormon Tabernacle Choir will stop before the presidential reviewing stand and sing the battle hymn of the Republic. At eventide, the biggest fireworks display in history will burst over the Mall. A pause for breath and 40,000 will sally forth in black tie and gown to 9 inaugural balls. President Reagan will speak at the last one he attends at the Museum of American History. And then, in the wee hours of Wednesday morning, it's home to the White House. And the end of the most regal day America allows itself. Reed Collins, CBS News, Washington.
This morning, Mr. Reagan and his wife Nancy attended services at St. John's Episcopal Church, often called the Church of Presidents, across Lafayette Park from the White House. Later on, they'll join the President and Mrs. Carter at the White House for the traditional ride up Pennsylvania Avenue to the Capitol.
This late note from Iran, Russ, a small bus with blackened windows drove onto the tarmac at Tehran Airport tonight. That is Tuesday evening, then stopped close to an Algerian airliner. Airport workers pushed a stairway against the door of the aircraft, according to witnesses. There was no immediate confirmation that that bus carried the 52 American hostages who are expected to be freed this evening. The witnesses said the bus looked too small to hold all 52 hostages, and night has fallen over the airport in Tehran under a blackout because of the war with Iraq.
And a reminder that we will bring you continuous coverage of the hostage situation and today's inaugural activities.
This is Les Woodruff in Washington. Events are moving rapidly. Officials at the White House are reporting the hostages are moving, but did not have any further information. Reuters is reporting from Tehran that a small bus with blackened windows has driven out onto the tarmac at the Tehran airport and stopped close to that Algerian airliner. No indication if the hostages were aboard that bus, however. My colleague Wes Vernon is at the White House and brings us up to date on notification of hostage families by the State Department. Wes?
Wes, here at State, we can confirm that the department itself now has begun to contact families of hostages simply to, as department spokesman John Trattner puts it, keep them informed. Earlier, we'd been told that those calls would wait until the hostages were actually free. The State Department is normally very cautious on things like this, and the significance, I would say, lies in the fact that despite its purported cautious optimism, the State Department apparently feels that this time things really, really look good enough to make these upbeat calls to the families.
Thank you, Wes. That's Wes Vernon at the State House, the State Department. The focus now is at the White House, where we are waiting for President Carter to make a statement. White House officials have indicated the president will do that once the hostages are airborne. Bob Crawford is at the White House. Bob, any indication when President Carter might make that statement?
Lester, has been no indication of any kind yet. It's still watching and waiting here at the White House, and that apparently is what the president and his aides are doing, too, back in the Oval Office. Just waiting for the final word that the hostages are on the way out of Iran before President Carter comes here to the briefing room at the White House to make an official statement to that effect. And we hope to also answer some questions. We have been given no reason here to believe that any new snag has developed. It just seems to be that there is a time element involved in getting the hostages from their hotel to the airport, getting them aboard the plane, getting the plane airborne, and getting it out of Iranian airspace before there is a statement from Mr. Carter. I emphasize again, they're telling us there are no new snags. It's just the logistics of time that we apparently are dealing with now. In the meantime, there is another time factor involved, and that is within minutes the Reagans are due here at the White House to have coffee with President Carter and the First Lady Rosalynn Carter. And after that, the schedule calls for the Carters and the Reagans to travel together in a motorcade to the Capitol for the inauguration ceremonies. And we have not yet been told how an announcement on the hostages, that is, that they've left Iran, will be handled if President Carter and the Reagans have already left the White House to go over to the Capitol. We are waiting to get some word from the press office now on how all of that will be handled should Mr. Carter be gone from the White House when the word comes that the hostages are indeed on their way out.
Bob, there's of course another time frame, and that is the Carter presidency has about an hour and 42 more minutes worth of life, official life, that is, before President-elect Ronald Reagan is the 40th president of the United States. And one can only wonder what would happen if the hostages have not cleared Iranian airspace by the time for the motorcade to go to the Capitol. Has there been any indication that the president perhaps would not have anything to say if that time becomes so crucial?
No, it hasn't. We just have not received any word on how they will handle all of those logistics. We're still waiting to find out. Along the same line, though, Les, there's a bit of a housekeeping difficulty here at the moment, though, because the members of President Carter's press staff, Press Secretary Jody Powell included, had originally indicated they would agree to a request by the incoming Reagan administration that they would clear out of their press offices in time for Mr. Reagan's press staff to move in and before Mr. Reagan actually came back here to the White House after the swearing-in ceremonies. But so far, there isn't any movement in that regard. The Carter press staff is staying put and standing pat and still passing out information to us relative to the hostages. And we're getting the impression here that apparently some kind of new arrangement is being made in that regard.
Bob, thanks very much for that updated report. And my colleague Wes Vernon at the White House, this is Les, or rather at the State Department, this is Les Woodruff in Washington.